The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hi, this is Kevin McCullough. Thanks for listening to the Christian Outlook podcast, where we cover today's issues from a perspective that honors your Christian faith. Our podcast is brought to you through a partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. Here's another piece I trust you'll enjoy.
Is there anything uglier or more distasteful than ingratitude? Shakespeare said, "Ingratitude is monstrous." In a recent opinion piece titled, "The Ungracious and Their Demonization of the Past," my guest this hour said, "Never has such a mediocre but self-important generation owed so much and yet expressed so little gratitude to its forebears." Joining us to talk about it, Dr. Victor Davis Hanson, New York Times bestselling author a number of times over, Martin and Illy Anderson Senior Fellow in Classics and Military History at the Hoover Institution, Stanford University, Senior Fellow at the Hoover Institution, and we've talked about it before, but I want to mention it again. It's a must-read, his latest book, The Dying Citizen, How Progressive Elites, Tribalism, and Globalization Are Destroying the Idea of America. Victor, my friend, always an honor and a delight to welcome you to the show. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Now, is it also fair to say that not only are other forces destroying our nation, but the spirit of ingratitude that currently is flourishing in the culture is really a very destructive force for the country, would you say?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it sends a message that this particular generation is far more talented and praiseworthy than it actually is. And that gives a bad signal to its narcissism and arrogance, because most of the infrastructure in the country they inherited, they never fought a World War II type of battle. They didn't send a man to the moon. They used their own very dubious standards to go back in time and judge a prior generation, and without any cognizance that the same can happen to them in a few generations, that future generations will look at this generation's, you know, whether it's 60 million abortions since Roe versus Wade, or a million homeless people on the streets, or 800 people being murdered in Chicago. There's going to be a lot they're going to reckon with historically, and yet they're completely oblivious to that. They don't deserve the self-praise that they heap on each other. And I think people are starting to understand that, and especially this idea that America was flawed at its beginning, never got any better, and is hopelessly pathological now and must be recalibrated. If that were to be true, then you would think that no one would want to come here rather than be the number one destination of all immigrants in the world. Or why would people who make that argument, who are the children of immigrants, wonder why their parents brought them here? Or if they don't like it so much, I mean, that's kind of reductionism, but you would think that they would want to leave as fast as possible to other alternate paradigms of civilization, but they never do.
Well, we have the rich and famous who keep promising us, threatening, they say, that they're going to leave if so-and-so is elected or whatever. But as you already allude, they never do that. They never satisfy that hope that they will fulfill the promise. That, I think, feeds that arrogance as well among the young who hear the rich and successful, in quotes, demonize our own country.
Yeah, and they feel, because that they inherited generations of technologically astute people, that each generation built on the other, that finally they came along and they've got iPhones and computers and the internet, that somehow they created that themselves, and therefore, because they're technologically advanced, they're morally and spiritually and intellectually advanced. When you look at today's Hollywood movies, I mean, they're basically comic books. that have been updated and rewritten, they're not anything like, you know, The Best Years of Our Lives or Shane or any of these classic movies of the Thin Man, any of those great movies that had characterization, plot, and drama. And if you look at the NBA or the NFL and you look at the player comportment or sportsmanship compared to just 20 years ago, it's steady decline. So they're never self-critical to see what they've done with the institution. The FBI has gone full circle back to the J. Edgar Hoover days and has forgotten that there were great reformist FBI people before we had James Comey and Andrew McCabe and Peter Strzok and Lisa Page and the rest of them. So when you look at what they did to the institutions or popular culture or professional sports or film, you just don't see a lot of accomplishment for all their hip self-congratulatory attitude. And when they topple statues, you wonder, well, who among you deserves a statue? Is it Angela Davis, who helped a murderer kill a judge? Is it, I don't know. I mean, there's some, is it Louis Farrakhan? Is it Fidel? All of these people don't have illustrious personal lives, but they can only tear down. They never offer any constructive alternative.
And you also say the last 2 years have seen an unprecedented escalation in a decades-long war on the American past. So my question out of that little sentence as I read it was, where would you say are the initial seeds or roots of this war? And along with that, why the recent escalation in the last couple of years?
Yeah, I think it started with the baby boomer generation. It was the first generation that was so affluent and universities were accessible. Their parents had gone through the Depression and World War II and made sure their children didn't have to suffer as they did. They were kind of a pampered generation. The economy was booming. And then the 60s cultural revolution hit. And although it wasn't successful, it did insidiously enter all of our institutions, academia, the corporate boardroom, Wall Street, popular entertainment, Silicon Valley. It was that kind of nihilistic attitude. And what happened, I think, with globalization, we sort of enriched the two coastal cultures, you know, the people in professions and high tech, insurance, investment, and we kind of wrote off the people whose labor was duplicated. And we confused cause and effect and said, look at these losers. They're not doing as well as I am. I go to Shanghai. Oh, I have dinner in Paris. Well, my company does. And culturally, they were written off. And then there was a lot of money to be made. So that gave them an unrealistic appreciation of themselves. And then finally, this particular generation, we had 50 million immigrants come. There's 50 million people in the United States that were not born here. It's the highest we've ever had percentage-wise and in absolute numbers. And yet we haven't made any effort to assimilate, integrate them, and teach them about the American principles that created the dynamic economy and safety and security they were envious of and wanted to come here. So we basically did the opposite. We've said, you're coming to an horrible country, and we on the left will give you federal subsidies for housing, education, food, medical health care on the proviso that you join us in suggesting this is a bad country and it needs to be radically changed. And that those immigrants have children, and we haven't really assimilated. So we have this woke movement where we've created a new artificial binary of something called, you know, white and non-white, 70 versus 30, but now we're carrying it into racial preferences for the allotments of COVID drugs or for COVID testing. And it's almost like we've gone backwards where we're trying to repeal de facto the 1964 Civil Rights Act that says no public agency shall use race to show preferences in its services. So it was calibrated that there's a lot of avenues that the left is using. One is demography, one is changing the Constitution. But at the base of it, it's never gratitude that they inherited such a wonderful country, a country that defeated communism and German militarism and Nazism and Japanese imperialism, got out of the Depression, not built Hoover Dam. They never say things like that. It's always, let's tear down Robert E. Lee's statue. It's never, how in the heck did they ever build the Hoover Dam? Who built the California Water Project? That's amazing. They never say anything like that.
Victor, I'd like to get your comments further on something you already well alluded to, and that is the ingratitude of people who should know better if they just knew anything. And I'm thinking of our young people who really don't have any idea the dimension of the people that they stand in judgment against who are in our past. Talk more about where that comes from. Is it from a combination of poor education in the home, of respect for our country, classrooms, and even academia, or maybe especially academia?
I think a lot of it is in the last 20 years, especially K through 12, and universities have not taught what we would call a solid core courses. I mean, they may have titles like history or English, but if you examine them carefully, they're watered down. They don't teach grammar. They don't teach syntax. They don't teach the basics of American civic identity or American history. So we have a lot of you can see that with Kamala Harris when she really does think that the January 6th riot was comparable to Pearl Harbor, where 2,500 people were killed, or 9/11. So when you and somebody who's been in academia for over 40 years, I can tell you that each year that I was there, the knowledge of people entering the university was diminished. And that was coupled with an ever affluent and leisure teenager. And so rather than work as much as they used to, a lot of people just took on student debt, and they had a $1.7 trillion now in aggregate debt, and they're very bitter about it, but they're not equipped with the university educations they got to get the type of jobs they need to pay off those loans or to get competitive jobs. So it's kind of a frustration that they liked the curriculum because it was watered down and they didn't ask much of them. But at the same time, they understood it was expensive and they didn't get a very good bargain because they don't know anything. And that makes them kind of ignorant and arrogant at the same time. And you can really see it when race, class, and gender, or diversity, you know, equity and inclusion, they keep talking about race, race, race. But if you say to a young person, you know, that 700,000 people in a very small country of about 35 million, 40 million died during the Civil War. We had the architect of the 1619 Project, Hannah Nicole Jones, that just wrote out that, you know, the Civil War started in 1865 rather than 1861. She's the supposed genius that thought up the 1619 date of America, and she doesn't even know when the Civil War started. And so I don't think Kamala Harris had any idea of how many people were killed or why on Pearl Harbor. And so people have no idea. They think that their experience is unique, and nobody's ever been through this before. They have no idea what it was like. And they, you know, you ask them questions. Why would a so-called white person in Minnesota or Michigan who had never seen an African-American in 1864 volunteer to go with William Tecumseh Sherman all the way down to the heart of the Confederacy and from Atlanta to Savannah, march right through the plantation class and some plantation free slaves and fight Southerners that looked like himself, all for the idea of ending slavery and helping people that didn't look like themselves? And yet thousands of people did that and wanted to do it. And so when they talk about racism, they don't have any complexity or they don't have any detail of what's happened in the past. And that makes them very arrogant, but it also makes them have this inferiority complex. They just don't want to talk about. They want to knock down a statue, but they don't want to differentiate between Robert E. Lee or, you know, a Nathan Bedford Forrest, or they think that all the founders were exactly the same, or they judge people on their skin color. And, you know, they have segregated theme houses, segregated dorms. They don't know anything about the history of segregation and how we fought to stop that. And yet they're now sort of the white supremacists' dream. If you ask a white supremacist in 1952, this new generation wants segregated dorms and segregated theme houses, segregated spaces on campus and separate graduations and separate medical care by race, they would say, oh, wow, we won. So it's tragic what they're doing out of their ignorance. But you can't really talk to them because they're so indoctrinated and they're so self-righteous and sanctimonious. Another thing is they're so agnostic or atheistic, this generation. All the data shows that they're the least religious, and so they have no sense of transcendence. They have no idea that what they do here has some bearing on what follows from the hereafter. So they sort of feel that this is all there is, and they're going to be God on earth. They're going to be perfect, and they're going to tell people how to live their lives as if there's some kind of religious figure. And when you don't have a religion or you don't have some transcendent, you will make one. And their religion is climate change, diversity, wokeness, and they're in search of something, but they've lost something, so they're trying to replace it with this, these earthly agendas. And it doesn't work very well, but they feel like they're missionaries, that they have to go around the world and all over the country and force you. I think conservatives have thought, you know, just leave me alone, or are mistaken. They're not going to leave you alone. You may not want to watch an NBA game and go to the movies or watch the Oscars, but they will find you. So you're going to have to finally stand up and say something and confront them, because they are a minority of the population, the woke people on the left. And but they gain traction and power when people are silent.
On that last point, Victor, how do we do it creatively and constructively? As listeners, I'm sure right now are wondering, yes, I share your sentiments and your thoughts and your cogent analysis, but how do I address it? How do I push back in ways that make a difference?
Yeah, I think they have to vote. They have to vote in every election. They have to give money and support candidates that agree with traditional American views. They have to write letters to the paper. They have to post. They have to be vocal. They have to be active. And they don't have to be crude and rude like the left is, but they have to be active and outspoken. And they have to go to school board meetings. And they have to tell their children, when you go to school, you're going to hear some things. They have to be proactive that are not true. I wish that weren't so, but that's going to be what you're going to hear. And they're going to have to tell their kid when they send them off to college, you're going to hear a version of America that's inaccurate. And I can't stop that, but we're going to have to make sure that you get a competitive curriculum that's historical. So I think they have to be more engaged. We all do. And speaking as a parent myself of children and grandchildren. And boy, you have to speak out. You cannot let the left prep the battlefield and call you a racist or a homophobe or a sexist so that you won't say anything. Like, we've all been cowered by them. And they're not the majority of the population. They're a small minority. Just because they control our institution doesn't mean that they control the country yet.
And is this not part of the reason why we're seeing a proliferation of homeschooling? And now part of that came out of COVID, and I think that was itself almost a providential gift to parents to say, hey, first of all, I'm now finding out what's being taught my kids, and two, I'm realizing I can create an alternative. But also, as you've already alluded, electing the proper people at the very grassroots level. School boards are more powerful than most people realize, for example.
They are, and I think they have to. We all want candidates to be perfect, but at this late date in the game, they have to be better than the alternative, and then we have to put up with somebody who's not perfect. Because we're in an existential war. I don't want to use that word in the sense of violence, but there are a lot of people in this country that want to change it so radically that the founders wouldn't even recognize it. We wouldn't recognize it. And they're not going to stop. They're not going to stop. They're only going to stop when they're confronted with consequences, that they're going to be voted out of office, that they're going to be fired if they try to break the law, if somebody engages in smash and grab, or you're a DA that empowers that, you're going to be out of office, you're going to face legal consequences. So I think the whole system is falling apart. We've got to repair it at every level. So
on that note, we'll have to break. Let's continue talking about it, my friend. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Again, Victor Davis Hanson and his website for his own personal papers, victorhanson.com. I would suggest that if you haven't gotten a copy of his latest book, The Dying Citizen, How Progressive Elites, Tribalism, and Globalization Are Destroying the Idea of America, very much along the lines of what we've been discussing briefely here. And he's a scholar of the First Order in every sense of the word. Highly recommend anything that he writes that you can get a hold of.
Thanks for listening to Christian Outlook. Our program is coming to you today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. It's America's most unique graduate leadership programs offered on Pepperdine's breathtaking campus in Malibu, California. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. If you enjoy our podcast, take a moment and tell a friend to subscribe today.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.